Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
I just think that if you had...
Well, I think his whole history in the league as a play caller is a mixed bag. Yeah, like he...
He had Derrick Henry, who's going to be wearing a gold jacket, and he resuscitated Ryan Tannehill's career, and he had A.J. Brown, and he had a good offense. He did have a bunch of highly picked players on offense with Atlanta as the head coach, who was calling the shots offensively, but he didn't have a quarterback to engineer it who was even as talented as Ryan Tannehill, and he struggled. Like, I guess then what you're saying is he's as good roughly as the personnel and players that he has, which would make him a bog-standard coordinator.
He's been an offensive coordinator for 6 years. Here is where his teams have ranked in scoring for those six. 10-4 in Tennessee, really good. That's how he got the Atlanta job. And then as the Falcons offensive coordinator, 26-15-26. So below average, 2 out of 3 years. And then 16, smack dab in the middle last year. You average those numbers out.
He's below average.
He averages 10-4, 26-15, 26-16. That's an average of 16th. That's what an Arthur Smith offense is. So, like,
the trend is going in the wrong direction, though. I mean, I guess he's better last year than he was with the Falcons, but, like, the two best years of his tenure are the first 2 years. Or the two best years of that we have data for are the years in Tennessee, really. So it's like he's never gotten back that fastball that he had there.
Well, and I give him a little bit more credit than maybe you do, it sounds like, for
winning. I gave him a C-plus higher, you'll recall, when they did that.
And you got kind of... crucified for it, but I mean, are people looking right now like the Steelers have a competitive advantage at offensive coordinator? And if they do, here's the next thing you have to ask yourself. Does the head coach let him coach that way? Well, Aditi, I think, might have broken a record on our show last football season. It was like an iron horse streak by Lou Gehrig or Cal Ripken. I think every time she came on, she tried to sneak in, even if the conversation was not steered in this direction, that people around the league were amazed by the job Arthur Smith was doing and felt like it implied in that was, man, if Arthur Smith could actually just cook and if he was allowed to do what he wanted, you'd be amazed by the results. You'd be taken aback by just how good of an offensive schemer he is, an offensive play caller.
I mean, a team gave him a chance to cook as the head coach, and he mostly started a grease fire.
Well, two excuses have been made for him there. Bad quarterbacks that he was given, and, oh, it's just a lot on a guy's plate to have to be a coordinator and a coach.
Okay.
It's the Dick LeBeau.
So now we give him all the grace in the world.
Theory.
Right.
It's the Dick LeBeau belief.
Then why would anybody want Mike Tomlin to be a head coach? If Aditi
Great question,
hearing that,
Chris.
No. I know you don't want him to be the head coach. I know this. I don't need you to answer this for me.
Well, who did you want to answer that?
Aditi's saying, if she's implying that he just needs to be let loose to do his thing, then the guy inhibiting him from doing that shouldn't have a job then. And all the people that, like, she hears from around the league, because we never hear that anybody outside of Pittsburgh is ready to fire Mike Tomlin at the drop of a hat. That is a thing unique to this region.
Yep.
These league sources must think Mike Tomlin absolutely sucks if he's inhibiting the great Arthur Smith.
If I was going to play devil's advocate to that, I think I would say that maybe those people that were gushing about Arthur Smith and what he had to do or make do with might say that Mike just felt like running a more conservative offense was good for the overall team.
Based on what? Because their defense is good, so if we play keep away and limit possessions?
Yeah.
Well, their defense got strafed, so that's also not a good data point.
I'm not saying I don't agree with that, but I'm saying like that could be, I guess, like how you would thread a needle and say Arthur Smith wasn't given carte blanche, but you know it's not necessarily like a total shot at Mike Tomlin.
Well,
I don't know.
All I'll say
I'm spitballing
is,
here.
All I'll say is Arthur Smith's not the quality or the caliber of coordinator where I'd be dying on the hill saying Arthur Smith is being done so wrong.
I don't think they have good assistant coaches, and it's been like that for a very long time. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Now, he had a Hall of Fame quarterback. That obviously helps. So that's, like, obviously point one. But right there, you know, not a close second, but second for me as to why those Steelers teams were better than the Steelers teams today, I think they were coached better because the staff that Tomlin had was better. He had one of the great offensive coordinators of this era, a guy that went on to win two Coach of the Year awards and win a Super Bowl when he became a head coach. And LeBeau is regarded as like, you know, I guess Spagnuolo and Fangio now are obviously like competing for accolades and compliments. But at the time of his retirement was looked at as one of the great defensive coordinators ever. So, and now what do we have? We have Terrell Austin, who's a figurehead defensive coordinator, and Arthur Smith, who I give him credit. The guy could go do nothing because he's a billionaire and he's worked hard and he's worked his way up the coaching chain. I don't think it's nepotism there that's got him to this position. But I also don't think he's that good. I think if he is, he'd still be a head coach.
Then whose fault is it that they have bad coordinators? The head coach for not hiring better guys or the owner for not hiring, for allowing him to hire better guys?
Well,
it has to start with one of
them.
Well,
here, okay.
You have to believe either that Mike is going to him saying, I want to hire this guy, and he's saying no, or that Art is, like, or that Mike is just saying, I just want to hire these
guys. Let's say you want to play like the cheap card on Art and say, they've got the smallest coaching staff in the league. They don't invest in assistant coaches the same way that other teams do. That's right. But then here's my rebuttal to that. If money is a little bit of an issue, why is Mike so against hiring younger coaches and up-and-coming coordinators and giving those guys an opportunity to see what they can do versus the Randy freaking Fechners of the world?
I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
Right, so that's why I can't say it's all Art.
I'm not trying to make it all Art. I think Mike has to bear plenty of the blame here. I'm trying to suss out where
we're sussing
out.
We're doing our sussing here.
I mean, the head coach is clearly more comfortable around veteran coaches
who aren't really that accomplished.
I've heard people speculate many times that it's because he wants to be surrounded by people that aren't threats to him. I find that to be preposterous because any amount of great coaching he would get from coordinators would not put him in jeopardy with Art Rooney. If the team was having success as a result of that, Art would slap him on the back and say, attaboy, great hire.
Exactly.
Now you've got something of a coaching tree forming.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's probably one of the bigger mysteries with the Steelers, and I think it's one of the biggest marks against both the owner and the head coach that their coaching staff is relegated to having Arthur Smith and people trying to tell themselves, well, this is a visionary hire. They've just got to let him loose. Because I don't think he's that. I think he's a power run game, play action connoisseur who could be a little bit better with better personnel and maybe a more willing head coach.
I view the situation that might unfold with Aaron Rodgers and what happened with Russell Wilson. I don't see any winners in either of those. Like the whole debate about how Arthur Smith wanted to restrict Russell Wilson because he didn't trust him. I get that. But I also understand why Russell Wilson might not trust Arthur Smith. And I think you can apply the same line of thinking to how the Arthur Smith-Aaron Rodgers relationship would work. Like, does Aaron Rodgers... It's the same argument I made with Ben. Ben's going down. It's the end of his career. Does he really want to go down, trusting Matt Canada, like putting his career in Matt Canada's
hands?
Aaron of course
Rodgers
not.
Does Aaron Rodgers want to trust just Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
Make your own offense?
But at the same time, if I'm Arthur Smith, I'm like, we just saw what it looks like when Aaron Rodgers has a consolidation of power.
It looked bad
in New York.
If I'm the Steelers and I've just had this speculation that maybe Arthur Smith didn't have the personnel to run his offense, I'm also switching my right tackle to left tackle, and Aaron Rodgers is only going to come here for 1 year at most, I'm suddenly – turning over the whole operation for 1 year, like potentially setting back any kind of continuity building for a year so that we can have a guy who went 5-12 last year run it his way.
But don't you think that's what's going to happen?
Which just frustrates me because I think we're finally seeing like a defined strategy emerge in their draft room every year, even if it's not one that's borne fruit yet. And yet the actual on-field coaching just seems a complete jumbled mess.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
The second annual Fan 5 Alarm Marathon presented by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union will take place on June 5th and 6th. This year, the broadcast will be at Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. We're looking for 25 fire departments that will benefit from this year's fundraising. Register your fire department now at 937thefan.com. Brought to you by North Country Brew Red House Ale, Saloni's Italian Bakery, Don's Appliances, and Charles Leach Insurance. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find co-host of the Pop and Joe Show, KDK-TV sportscasting legend, and host of the nightly sports call simulcast here on The Fan, Bob Pompiani. Bob, it just went final in at PNC Park. Cubs 8, Pirates 3, Buccos lose 2 of 3. They are now, I believe, 7 games out of first place in the NL Central. 12-20 record, 8 games under 500. Your thoughts right now?
Well, it's a shame, Pony, that they continue to not take advantage of Paul Skenes. And I know today he gave up home runs and all that, but it makes it difficult when you only score 2 or 3 runs every time out. And that remains a problem, consistent offense. But, man, when he's on the mound, you expect better results just because he normally will keep you in games, if not dominate. And so that's tough to lose 2 out of 3. I'll tell you what, the Cubs have done a lot in the offseason, and it's starting to show here. They made some really good acquisitions, Tucker being among them, the trade for Crow Armstrong. We saw how talented that kid is in the series. You know, they got a lot of good weapons over there. So it's tough to dig out no matter who you are. But when you're 12-20 with this roster, it's going to be very tough for them to dig out of that.
Any long-term concerns or greater than this game, this day concerns for Paul Skenes after what you saw?
Chris, I don't think so. I think he knows what he's doing out there. I'll trust every time he goes out there, he's going to give them a quality start. Now, we haven't seen many games in which, you know, he didn't have maybe his best stuff and teams got to him. So I think that's kind of the aberration. I think you're going to see him do what he does. And like I said, you just got to get more offense. You can't, every time they go out, get 2 or 3 runs a game. They've got to have games that are breakout games to make life a little easier on your pitching staff, on everyone involved.
O'Neill Cruz had another big game, made a diving catch in center field, drove the ball to the notch, and drove in a run early in the game when the Pirates still had the lead before Skenes gave up those home runs. Bob, part of the issue for me is Cruz is actually looking like a star or even a superstar, and yet the team still sucks. If you had told me this year that O'Neill Cruz was going to have this kind of breakout, I would absolutely expect that they would be better than 8 games under 500.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that you saw the upside potential there, finally putting it together. I was encouraged by that catch, by the way, because he's had his moments out there. But I think also this is, you know, still kind of in his infancy of playing this position, and they threw him out there. And I think in time he'll be more than an adequate outfielder. I know there have been some things that made you think maybe differently earlier this season, but I think he feels pretty good about his game. And you're right, when you have the kind of production he's had so far, I'm glad he's in the top of the lineup. He should be there every day, and it shouldn't change. You expect better, especially with a pitching staff that in time, if they add Chandler soon, I imagine that'll be soon. Jones comes back. I know it's going to be several weeks still, but you know they have the potential to be a pretty good staff. Again, you're going to be wasting these opportunities, and they've already wasted Skenes this year, I think, by not getting enough in the offseason where it was begging for more than what they did.
Bob, I can't help but go back to your first answer about the Cubs. They've made moves, and now they're seeing it bear fruit on the field with this team they've assembled, this roster they've assembled. and if this team does not, the Pirates that is, does not rally and somehow win more games than they lose this year, is there any situation or scenario by which you think Ben Cherington should keep his job?
No, but I would say that for the entire, the manager and him, only because it's year six. It's time. And if you're not going to see the kind of results in 6 years, what makes you think you're going to see it in year seven or eight? The biggest thing is not developing enough hitters. They need hitters, and they have not been able to get cash in guys, very, very few, if any, during Ben Cherington's regime here. So I'm sure they expected better than this. You know, test your patience to keep waiting. And the fan base is growing more and more weary of this. The apathy element could become real. You don't want that if it hasn't happened in some circles already. You know, anger versus apathy, I'll take anger, but anger may turn to apathy. So they got to right the ship here.
If you go 5-9 for them today, they gave Hayes all that money. 236 hitter, went 0-4. Canario, who they picked up from the Mets, 0.97 average. Adam Frazier, mid-30s, 0-4, 233 average, 5.93 OPS. Triolo batting 163, put up an 0-4. Henry Davis was actually on base a couple times. He got, how about this, Mulls? He got his batting average up to 160. Congratulations on all his success.
We love that for Big Hank the Tank. Hammering Hank Davis.
Bob, that's two-thirds of your batting order. 5-9, and all of them are bad hitters. How is that possible in year six of a rebuild?
That's the whole question. We've been talking about this all along. Where are the bats? You need bats as much as, arms are special. But when you have good arms, you have no bats, you're essentially wasting that time. And, geez, Mario Mendoza would look like an all-star on this team. Just get to that level, and some people would be appreciative of it.
So, by the way, they have great arms? They have Paul Skeens. Who else would you say is a great arm for them?
I consider him to be a great arm.
Well, we haven't seen him yet, though. Well, I hope so. My fingers are crossed. But outside of those two guys, who else? Mitch Keller's ERA is almost four.
Jared Jones, as a rookie, showed you something last year. So I'm talking about those three, and if Mitch Keller is a four in this eventually, that's a pretty good starting staff. And, again, it's only as good as the support he gets from an offensive point of view, and it's just not happening. You can make a lot of guys look much better than they are record-wise if you have offense. But if you don't, then even the ones who throw up the kind of numbers that Skeens is possibly going to put up over the course of this long season, it won't matter because it doesn't help you win. So it takes involved. And
I was going to say, the indictment of Cherington to me is if you fired him tomorrow, whoever took over from him from the outside, let's say, for him, would look at this and say, other than Paul Skeens, why would I not just rebuild this thing? That's how far away they still feel like from fielding a really complete and competitive roster.
Yeah, when you're expecting Canario, and, I understand he's young, but still, at some point, you have to get results. This is a result-based business, like they all are. I'm just expecting contention. That would be my low bar on this. Just be in contention to make it interesting throughout the course of the year. At 12-20, what are they on pace for, 103 or 4 losses? I mean, that's not contention, and it's year six.
No, it's worse than the first 3 years of this regime. Bob, thank you. We appreciate you hopping on with us. Enjoy your long weekend off from the radio station, and we'll hear you on Monday, okay?
Yes, sir. Look forward to it. You guys have a good one. Thanks.
Thank you. Taking your reaction calls now on the Pirates losing today. Paul Skeens' worst start, 412-928-9370. If you're leaving the game, if you just listen to the game, if you just watch the game, your thoughts, 412-928-9370. On these abysmal Pirates, another series loss. This one hurts more because A, it's at home, and B, it's against the team in theory you're chasing. And if this team is ever going to get its crap together and go on a run, they got to win series at home and beat teams in the NL Central. And this is the team that you're shooting for, you're aspiring to be, and they found a way to come back and win and take 2 out of 3. And if Skeens had not had the start in L.A. against the Dodgers, I would have answered your question that you asked Bob, Chris, are you worried about him, with an emphatic yes. But I also don't want to say an emphatic no. So he's got the best whip in the majors. His control was horrible today. It was the worst control he's ever had. He walked three guys, and he walked back-to-back-to-back guys. That had never happened. He did that in the third inning.
He gave up more home runs than he had strikeouts today.
Right.
He had 2 strikeouts. He gave up 3 jacks.
He gave up 3 home runs, and he walked 3 guys in a row. So, obviously, the guy gets, you cut him some slack because he's been amazing. No other pitcher at this point in his career has had as low of an ERA. His ERA now is 2.74. That seems really good. It's not as good as Andrew Heaney's. Also, if you look at Major League Baseball trends this year, an unbelievable amount of pitchers have low ERAs. Pitching is way ahead of hitting right now. So much for these torpedo bats phenomenon. You've got guys who are journeyman pitchers who have pitched to a... Skeens might be after today, like, he might have the 35th best ERA in the major leagues.
Well, his FIP, which is the old fielding independent number, like, are you hurt by bad defense? It was the best in the majors starting today. It's like 25th in the majors after today. That's so, another bad sign.
So all I'm saying is, you know, Bob said you got to find a way to score runs. To be blunt about it, if you get three runs, I expect you to win the Paul Skeens starts.
They're now 3-4 in his seven starts.
And his over, yeah, that's right. 3-4 in his starts, and his official record is 3-3.
But they've lost.
That's how you become a crappy ass team.
What did we say they needed to do if he started 30 games? Just using a round number, they needed to go what 22-8, 21-9, probably.
Yeah, to make the playoffs,
to have a chance.
Yeah.
So they're already way behind pace there. Way behind pace. They're looking like they're going to go more like, I don't know, 13-17 if he has 30 starts.
Oh my God.
But tell me where I'm wrong.
I know, but all I'm saying is today he actually deserves
some blame. No, he looked like
he
was part of the problem today. They staked him to a 2-0 lead, and then he just gave it up all in one inning. First inning of his career where he's ever given up two home runs in an inning, and then he just decided to make it three.
He looked like a normal pitcher.
Suzuki, dead red, 3-0. He just throws one, a meatball, right over the plate that gets tattooed.
He had four walks on the year coming into this game, and he had four today. So he equaled his season total. The other thing that I do think is worth watching, I'm not saying worry, I'm not saying freak out, I'm saying worth watching, it is puzzling to me why his strikeout numbers are so low.
Beyond the idea that he's trying to be more efficient, like, that doesn't explain the whole thing.
Everybody says miss bats, and his personal philosophy is put the ball in play on me more. I don't like that.
I think that's oversimplifying. I think he wanted to try to go deeper into games with lower pitch counts while still missing bats. So selectively try to get weak, crappy contact early. I don't think the guy's going pitch to contact. I think he wants to strike people out because I think he knows that's still the best way to do it. But you strike a bunch of people out, you might be out by the sixth inning. You get an extra inning of Paul Skeens in a game. He goes seven instead of six. That's a lot more valuable. It cuts an entire three outs off the game that you have to have your bullpen get. That's how I look at that. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a Pirates fan, and so I see things blow up in this team's face all the time. I'm on like, not red alert, not orange alert. I'm starting to creep towards yellow alert with him. Still in the green, but the needle is starting to move in a direction I do not want it to.
Bucko Minute Time at 3:30. Time to make that call to the Beal Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums, 724-443-5610. We'll hear what Paul Skeens has to say about his worst start yet as a big leaguer. We'll hear Donnie Kelly, because Derek Shelton did not manage today. His son graduated from Florida Atlantic University. Congratulations on all the Shelton family success. So Donnie Kelly got to manage, and honestly, there was a situation in this game that we'll get to where I, as Chris likes to say, he did not exactly bathe himself in glory in game one. So the people clamoring for Donnie Kelly, his first crack to make a big, important in-game decision, I thought, blew up in
his face.
I
think sometimes when you're the substitute teacher, you don't want to do anything that the normal teacher wouldn't do. So maybe
so you
that's
just
why,
copy his strategy?
Maybe that's why he made such bad moves.
Yes. Yeah, the one I'm talking about is in the seventh inning when Wentz was in the game and he decided the guy that I'm going to ask to put out the fire here with Ian Happ from Mount Lebo, who, by the way, the Pirates can never get out.
Correct.
He had three hits today and also walked. So five appearances, on base four times, three hits, and he's now reached base safely in 34 consecutive games against the Pirates.
I'm looking.
Who did they draft the year that he went? That he came out. I'd love to know they bypassed.
All right, you ready?
Which jabroni did they pick instead of the kid from Mount Lebo in that draft? That would not be a Charrington mistake. That would have been Huntington.
Happ went ninth. They picked 19th.
Okay.
That was the year they did take, though, Kevin Newman.
All right, so they get a pass there.
because, yes, Hap is one of the best players out of that draft. Bregman probably the best, but yes.
With two outs in the seventh inning, and we still got a close game, at that point it's Cubs 3, Pirates 2. It's a 3-2 game,
yep.
Down a run, and Donnie Kelly brought Kyle Nicklaus into the game. What is Kyle Nicklaus's ERA this year?
Oh, that's a good question. I could look that up. I can tell you that it looks like he's a human gas can most of the time he's out there.
Because one batter, one home run, a two-run shot, and 3-2 turned into 5-2.
By the way, Ian Happ, 969 career OPS against the Pirates,
yeah.
In case you were curious. He somehow does better against the Reds. He just obliterates
the NL
Central.
He went to school there. He's a Bearcat.
He obliterates the NL Central. He's ridiculous, actually.
Do you have that ERA?
Kyle Nicklaus is ERA, Pony. Thank you. I am getting this for you right now, and I'm going to tell you that Kyle Nicklaus came into the game sporting an ERA of 11.37.
412-928-9370, your Bucko reaction. Here is Wade to lead us off. Hello, Wade.
Hey, guys. I actually went to the game. I left about the fifth inning, and I'll sum up the Pirates season in nothing that happened on the field, but what happened in the stands. And here's what it was. It was the fruit roll-up challenge, and the prize, if you won, was an autographed picture of, guess who, guys?
Ryan Borucki.
Spencer Horowitz, who has not played a single at-bat, and that was the prize. I'll hang up, but that's where we are.
Thank you. What do you think the fruit roll-up challenge would be?
Is it like...
like a kid has to chew it and eat a whole thing in the shortest amount of time.
So here's what would make more sense. Now, fruit by the foot, you remember that? What a fruit snack that was. If you make somebody start at the end of the fruit by the foot and they've got to eat it with no hands, you know what I mean? Like, that's an easy visual. Who's eating the fruit by the foot quicker?
But maybe it's just because it's so hard to chew a fruit roll-up that whoever can just eat the whole thing fastest wins.
I'll be honest.
It's an afternoon game and school's still going on, so I guess they come up with things like this.
I was a huge fruit roll-up guy. As a matter of fact, I'd eat a fruit roll-up right now. Speaking of school, I think my kid's school is calling me.
So it sounds like you disagree with Wade. You don't think that that's something that's worth haranguing the
Spencer,
Pirates for.
No, I mean, the Spencer Horowitz being autographed, being the prize, is not great. Speaking of school, I think Lennox has got no school again tomorrow. I think I'm getting the old robo call.
Congratulations on all your success.
Is that congratulations on my success?
Here's Kevin next. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, gentlemen. I was sitting behind the Pirates dugout. Three quick observations. One, the Cubbies have some really good bats. They've done a great job of rebuilding. Two, like you guys mentioned, the bottom half of our lineup is just ridiculous.
Hey, let me cut you off on two before you get to three, and I will let you get to three. I just want to know how frustrated it makes you as a fan, mainly towards Ben Cherington, because it's still about trying to acquire talent, cheap talent, young talent, that the Cubs have done this so quickly that it's not just all been the Cubs spending huge gobs of money on players. And that Ben Cherington's in year six and the Pirates' bottom of the lineup looks like it's about to, you told us it looked.
Yeah, I think, what Pomp said, at some point in time, you kind of get a little bit. I mean, we were excited to go to the game and watch Skeens pitch, but you kind of get used to it. You really do. You kind of think that, you just get used to the fact that if you fall behind, the chances of you coming back to win the game, which they did do yesterday, are not that great if things don't happen in the first four hitters.
Thanks, Kevin. I think Skeens, most days, if I told you he gave up three runs against the best lineup in baseball and as far as runs scored, I'd be like, whatever. He was great against the Dodgers in L.A. That's a potent lineup. He looked like he was unhittable for a lot of that game Friday night. It was not good hitting by the Cubs. I thought it was bad pitching by him. Falling behind in counts.
He walked
batters.
Leaving
pitches right over the middle. Like, I had not seen this version of Paul Skeens in the major leagues
He walked a ton of batters. He had no command and no control. That is one of the easiest ways to get tattooed in the major leagues, is to not be able to know where you're putting the ball.
I just wonder, I've said this before with him, I just wonder sometimes if less is more. He's got all these pitches now.
We've gotten that sent to us, by the way, by a bunch of people, that he has too many pitches. that he needs to refine it down to his best four, let's say, because he's got, what, about
he's
seven?
That's what it feels like to me, anecdotally.
So
I'm watching the game cast here while I'm watching the game, and every time a pitch goes by, it's a splinker, then a splitter, then a two-seamer, then a four-seamer, a changeup, curveball, slider. He's got like 9 pitches right now. Does he need 9 to be great? He had like 3 last year, maybe. I'd like to look up on Fangraphs how often he threw his pitches last year. Maybe he threw 3? Guy was the best pitcher in baseball from the second he got there. So, you know, I have no, you know, this is fan criticizing probably the best pitcher alive. But I feel like I've at least got a little bit of the grounds to do so today because of how he looked. And the first month of this season for him, and I guess it's a testament to him that he's a 2.74 ERA, despite what I'm about to say, it does seem very experimental to me. Like, he's taken not just spring training.
Yeah, it seems like
he's taken the first month of the season also to tinker with who he is.
See, I don't really like that. You should be doing that in spring training, whatever you pick up. Like, does Sidney Crosby, the ultimate, I try to get better at something every offseason, does he sit there in the middle of, like, the new season and go, I'm still working on this? No.
412-928-9370. Steph is next here on 93.7 The Fan. Hello, Steph.
Hey, dude. It's Seth, by the way.
But anyways, sorry,
Seth. Two things real quick. You're good. Two things real quick. First thing, I think it is time to worry. For Skeens, the velo's down, the strikeouts are down. He's put up too many hits. I mean, home runs, walks, everything. Doesn't look himself. Second thing is, I think McCutchen needs to be benched at least the next 2 games. I don't know if anyone even saw him not even run down the line when Dansby Swanson makes a terrible throw, overthrows the first baseman. He has to jump off the bag, takes a few steps off, runs back, and taps on the bag. McCutchen doesn't even notice because he's jogging down the line with his head down. I mean,
on that play that
so
people,
that was in the 6th inning. I didn't see that live.
Oh, I'm assuming that's the play where I got the sense, not being able to watch hear the audio on the TV broadcast, that they were more mad at O'Neill Cruz for not going home after the pitcher lobbed the ball way off the base very slowly, even though Cruz had done the right thing, frozen and gotten back to third base so he couldn't get nabbed there. Like, that's just I assume the broadcast was mad about.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the shortstop or a pitcher or whatever, but, I mean, yeah, like, he's not – he's looking on the ground, jogging. In the 8th inning, when we had momentum, had already scored a run – and we got O'Neill Cruz on third.
Oh,
base.
You're talking about in the 8th inning now.
Yeah,
I got gotcha. You.
That is
all right.
So that is the play I'm talking about. Yeah, he hit it right back to the pitcher, and the pitcher tried to look O'Neill back to third. Cruz did get back correctly. Then he threw a lollipop that went well off the base. But yeah, it was still McCutchen was out by 2 full steps.
Thanks for the call. Interesting. You know, I think in that situation when it looks like it's such an obvious out, and you're dealing with a guy who's in his late 30s, and it's the 8th inning of a game, I don't want to crush him for it, but I feel funny about this because I didn't see it happen. Like
I watched it happen.
I want to see the. So what would you say about it then?
I just
Did you think it was a lack of hustle?
No, I was so. I didn't think it was like egregious. I thought it was noteworthy that the broadcast from what I
what
you know
the heck.
You know how you can tell on a broadcast if they cut to a different player that they're probably talking about him, even if you can't hear the audio.
Yeah,
I got the sense that they were wondering aloud, and maybe I'm wrong here, why O'Neill Cruz didn't bolt for home there, when on that play, I thought he did everything the way you're supposed to do it. And is he like a mind reader that the guy's going to throw a lollipop over? He's probably not even looking at the pitcher at that point, running back to third. And people, I guess that would be my thought, is that I thought the broadcast team might have been critical of the way he handled that.